Yeah.
But we'll see. But I mean, you know, this has made a world of difference in terms of his neck and arms and stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, you know, it seems like it might be worth the effort at this point while he can still use a pointer.
Had one little girl that was, we were given her the laser, and she and her sister started playing with it out the window.
Uh-oh.
And I came to a house. I came to their house, and there was like 8 police cars down at the bottom. I had no idea.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I hope they're all right up there. They're on the 5th floor. I ran up the 5 flights, and they're all there.
Oh,
the
no.
Somebody thought it was a rifle being pointed,
no.
Like a sight.
Oh, God. How old were these kids?
They were about 8. Uh-huh. They were twins.
Yeah.
So only worked with one of them, but the other one was enjoying the pointing the laser out the window.
Yeah. I would D U Doc A, if the S W A SWAT team showed up.
I came running up those stairs and down there. They're all in the door, and the lady, get off! Please clear the floor. I said, I have to go in there. This is where I'm coming. And then I said, I'm the one. Then they said, there's some kind of problem with the laser. I said, I know. I gave it to her.
Uh-oh.
But she wasn't supposed to point it out the window. I never even thought of it.
How? L? Long have we known you?
83, I think, when I first went to work at Rockridge.
Yeah. That's what, 26
years?
26 years. Wowee, Francie.
I know. I had to give him a resume the other day, and I'd been a physical therapist for 40 years.
Whoa. Whoa.
That sounded terrible.
Yes. I have one, 18, P, A, G, page, an 18-page resume.
I didn't, you know, I had to type one up the other night because I didn't want to put all my courses I've been to and all that kind. Nobody's interested in all of that. That's more for if you're trying for a job, I think, or something.
Yeah.
My job seeking days are over.
Yeah.
Thank God.
What? You have D S E E seen us C H A change.
Yeah.
Over the 26 years.
All of us have changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still the same people, pretty much. Mm. Not the rest of us didn't change. We look different, but I don't think we're different any other way.
Right. Yeah. The but people have C O come and gone.
Yeah. And now even like a lot of, like you're saying, a lot of my friends have died. My college roommate and, you know, things like that.
And oh, you, our cat. We've been with our cat and Mikey all have, so like we've all been together the whole time. It's been the six of us, three cats, three humans.
Yeah. We lost the dog a couple of months ago. I was in the hospital having my hip done, and the boys accidentally let the wrong two dogs out together.
Oh, no. Oh, how did he die?
They got into it. I came home.
Oh, one dog killed the other dog.
She didn't kill her, but she just chewed her up so badly. And I had just, I'm 3 days post-hospital, and not supposed to bend and stoop because I've got my new hip and everything. And I tried cleaning her up with peroxide and stuff, but she wouldn't eat and she wouldn't take medicine, pills. And so they finally, after about a week, I had to put her down.
Weren't we? A young dog?
9.
Yeah.
They were all 3 brothers and sisters.
Oh, wow.
From the same litter. This one wasn't ours, but she's been with us most of that time.
Yeah.
Her owner was a friend of the boys, separated from his wife.
Mm.
And he came over to the house. I said, I'll take the dog.
We'll take you. He was that B.A. He was that bad that you wouldn't take him.
Yes.
You.
Yes.
H. You. No. You. Usually. Take. Take them.
Yeah, that's true. This was a while back. And he ended up coming back and staying for about a year.
So in the end, you
I got both
take
of them. But I fought it. It wasn't until he was living in his car that I felt sorry for him. Now, it was funny because my adopted son, Rob, just got a job with Microsoft, a really good job. Only trouble is he and his wife live up above Sacramento in Antelope, and she has a good job with Oracle, but up there. And they have 2 babies, and they've got all babysitting, so he's been staying now. He's back home.
Oh,
he
wow.
stays during the week so that it's half the ride, you know, to go to there. And then he met another guy who just came here from Carolina, and he said, do you think he could stay?
Oh,
he doesn't
no.
have it. I said, you know what? This is a word that doesn't come out of my mouth very easily. No. I'm sorry. There's enough people in this house.
How
There's
many
no
do you
more
have
bedrooms.
Living there now? How many do you have living there
well,
now?
Well, Nino and Chandor live with me. And then we
oh,
had,
Chandor lives with you?
Yes.
Now?
He's been there about 4 years. He came back home.
Wow.
And then we had Aunt Ruby.
Right.
And then we have Jaden, who's in Chandra's daughter, who lives there like summers and Christmas and, you know, holidays and things. So, and then Sammy's little son, Josiah, stays a lot on the weekends. And so there's just no more beds.
Wow.
And so Rob said, but there was a time when we could just sleep any place. Rob, you're 35 years old, for God's sake. The sleeping every place is over. Everybody's got to have a bed.
Wow. We L O S lost one of our people the other day.
Was living here?
And moved out. Yeah.
You still have people that come and study
come and
with
go.
You? Come and study with you?
Yes,
come
we
and
do.
Study you?
Yes. Jay? Well, Jen is here from Toronto.
Mm.
She moved here from Toronto. She's been she's been doing intensives with Frank for years, where she'd come down here and stay for like 10 days and do and like
and
meet with Frank
back,
every day
yeah.
and stay
yeah.
live in the studio. And then she just decided to move here. So now she's living here in the Blue House.
How many people in the Blue House?
There were four. Now there are three. Mm-hmm. Three in each house, plus assorted critters. Mm-hmm.
You know, that is one thing that has changed. We're getting a little more used to quiet. But maybe once those darn dogs, I don't have those dogs anymore, I won't have to worry. But I'm worried about strangers having to be in the house. I don't want anybody to get bit or, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it's just better, quiet.
My, there, then, we. Could see. O. M. Come. A, come again.
Yeah, you could come again. You never had any trouble with the dogs. Even the bad one. Melanie. Yeah. We had to put it, we put him down about 3 years ago. That was a relief.
For any
dangerous.
Particular reason you put him down? Because
he needed a $3,000 surgery.
Oh. Yeah.
And not just the cost, but it was going to be like 6 months worth of grafting thing.
Oh.
One of those things on his head.
Well, why put them
through
that?
He was 16 years old.
Uh-huh.
And he was dangerous. You just never knew what he was going to do.
Yeah.
Mostly, he wasn't dangerous for us, but...
Anybody else. Yeah. Why? Put them through that.
No, it's too much.
Yeah.
I just had the other one got sick about a month ago. And I said, no more. I'm just not going to spend that kind of money, you know, on veterinary. And if they won't take medicine and they won't take anything. So I waited about a week and she went down. She wouldn't get up. She was in her kennel and she wouldn't come out. So I broke down and got my son. It's funny because I called the place we usually go to. And on a regular day, you couldn't come in without an appointment in the middle of the day to the veterinary. I said, well, she's not walking. She weighs 80 pounds. I can't carry her. My son is here right now. Can't we come in? Yes, but we're going to charge you $100 to see you as an emergency.
Whoa.
So I said, well, I wasn't planning on spending more than about $150. So I don't want to spend it on that. So I found another place where you could just walk in. And they were very nice. They kept her all day. $150. Mm. They gave her IVs. They diagnosed the problem as pancreatitis. She had gotten into the garbage. Mm. And they gave her IVs and gave me some medicine. And and I just, they said, now if she isn't better in about 4 days, you bring her back. No, I'm not bringing her back. That's all. But she got better. Amazing. She didn't eat for 3 weeks. She looked like a refugee from a starvation camp.
Yeah.
But now she's eating and she's fine.
I see. Sib. That's our cat. Sib. G. O. Got. S. I.
Sick.
Oh, like a year or so ago. It was one of those situations where they wanted to do thousands of dollars worth of work on her. And we just said no. We wouldn't do it. And we thought the only option was going to be to put her down. And once we said no, there were other options. You know what I mean?
The same thing. I mean, it isn't. It's funny how you have a sense. I kept looking at the dog and he kept saying, no, she's going to kill all her cells in her... All the cells of her intestines will die if she doesn't eat and all this stuff. And I was like, I tried a couple of times shoving food in her mouth and she was turning her face away from me. And I just said, nah, this is silly. And she looked like she was getting better, even though she wouldn't eat. She was drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That was the good part of it. She would drink a lot of water. And finally, I was tired one night. I came home late, and I'd stopped and gotten Chinese food, and she ate all my Chinese food. She had my shrimp, and she had the fried rice.
And she's been fine ever since. Fine. Sib, she, K, N, J, just, wanted Chinese.
Yeah. I don't know. I tried everything. Hamburger, you know, I went out and bought hamburger. None of us eat it. We were feeding it to the dog.
Right.
And rice, just plain rice. I tried ricotta. You know, the cheese. She liked cheese. I was trying to give her ricotta.
What you don't do for your critters. So familiar.
If I would have only known, I would have bought Chinese sooner.
Right.
Yes.
C, Sid, G, got better. Yeah, that year plus ago when we decided not to do the multiple grand option.
$30 medication.
We did a $30 medication instead, and she really had an extra year onto her life where she you know, she was she took medicine, but you know, they all do once they get over 15.
Oh yeah.
And she
all had kidney trouble.
Yeah, and she was really fine, you know, and but then you know, she'd have these things, cycles where she'd like stop eating. Everybody kind of does this. We'd bring her to the vet. He'd say, she seems fine. I don't know what. And he'd offer her food, and she'd gobble it up. $100! So, but in the end, her kidneys went.
Yeah.
And then that was like, you know, that was all we could do.
I know many people. I mean, a lot of my friends, too. I mean, they get attached. They even start IVs on their cats, you know, but
Well, I think we kept her alive for a couple of weeks, giving her baby food in a syringe.
Yeah.
And we found just the baby food she liked, and she was eating it. We'd give her the water, and, you know, until we found out her kidneys had failed. And then it was like, you know. And then you have to let her go.
All things must come to the
end. Yeah. T R T E. Tell. That to, but our Siamese cat, tell that to Kitty. Mm-hmm. He's the older of the three.
And he's still kicking.
Well, yeah, but he was like really attached to Sib. Like their whole life, he just beat her up. That's what he does. He beats the other two up all the time. He's the boss. And Sib and Sasha are from the same litter. So, and they're like a year younger than Kitty. But he's a Siamese, and they're supposed to live longer, and he's very athletic, and he's still kicking. He's like 19 years old. But when she got sick, he just, like, attached himself to her. And so for, like, over a year, they were inseparable. They did everything together. And so when we didn't bring her home, he has not been happy. He'll probably vocalize at some point.
Since Gilla and the male and this female that died stayed together, and then we kept this other one by herself in the laundry room. She has a 60-foot run, you know, and then I put them in the bedroom at night and then let her out at night, and she could be with people and be with us, but couldn't let there just weren't enough places to let everybody out. And he misses the one that died. I have to give him people food. He won't eat just food anymore.
Since she's gone,
he won't eat his food. He used to eat it, you know.
Yeah.
But
our vet said, because this is really our first, I've never had a pet that we put to sleep or anything. The vet said that usually 3 to 6 weeks is how long is the, like, mourning process.
It's been 4 months for Gilla. And, you know, we were talking about, should we let him and Annabelle out together? Maybe they'd be... I don't want to have to deal with it if they don't.
Right. These are pit
200
bulls,
pound,
aren't they?
200 pound dogs, you know.
P. R. P. E. People. Think. Animals. Don't. T. No, R, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I don't know, but he doesn't seem the same.
I know
quiet.
Our guys know what's going on. Yeah. They totally remember her. And if we talk about her, Kitsy will get really worked up. I mean, you can't even think about her. You know, if I'm holding him and I think about Sip, he'll turn and he'll stare at me like this, like, Jesus, I can't even think about her.
Cats are, we had, I before I had the dogs, I had cats, and I love cats.
Cold? Yeah. Yeah, you don't have cats now.
Can't. Because the dogs
would eat them. Yeah.
Yes, but I used to have two from a litter, two calicos, and the one used to was that they did one went outside and one stayed inside, and the outside one used to come home late at night and just come right on top of my chest and start kneading and drooling. That was like.
Yum.
Yeah, she was. We had them a long time, but we just the dogs. I can't trust the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we'll wait when those dogs are gone. It's over. We were having a rat problem for a while in the house.
Oh, the dogs get
the
them?
Dogs can't. They're not fast enough. The rats go behind the furniture or behind the things.
Well, you know, we had a rat just recently in the laundry room. Mikey goes into the laundry room, and he's in the washer. In the washer.
The screamer.
Oh, my God. And you know what it was? Our washer, I thought our washer was broken because there was water on the floor, so I call our washer guy, Jamie, and he said, you know, it's not the washer. Your water's not draining. I think the rat might have been in there. And so Alexi kind of cleans that out. And the next thing you know, there's a rat in the washer. And none of these cats did a damn thing. But I don't know. Maybe when they reach a certain age, they don't do rats anymore.
But I had the same sort of a thing. The water wouldn't go down in the sink. So I stuck my hand down in the garbage. You talk about scream, I could have raised the dead.
Did you feel a rat?
What the heck did they put in this
stupid
house?
Did you pull it out?
You bet. I thought it was a towel. I'm like, these boys, how in the heck can you put a towel down the sink? You know, and I've got my hand up and pulled out. It was dead. It had drowned.
Oh.
It had drowned because it had made the sink back up. The better one was I kept a bucket because, you know, I would mopping things and trying to keep things clean. And so I always had a bucket with some bleach in it. And it was right outside one of the cupboards. And one of them didn't realize it. And I come around, there's a white rat floating around in the bleach bucket. Because it had been bleached. I can't.
Oh, no.
It wasn't funny. You know, they started eating my orchids. Can you imagine? I mean, that was death.
Fighting more.
That was death. First, I got some fish tanks, and I put the orchids down in the fish tanks so because they couldn't climb up the glass.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't. They just weren't doing as well. So I started. Somebody gave me some stuff to put in the attic and put in the thing. It's kind of turquoise.
Is it like a poison?
It's a poison, but it's not poisonous to the dogs or, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but...
Did it work?
There was a deadly silence, usually at night in the kitchen. They were terrorizing the kitchen. Their feet were running. Nino could have run a porno show from over the top of the steps go down into his room. They'd be screeching and screaming and running after one. I don't know what the heck they were doing in there. And the first couple of nights, it got really quiet in the house. And I thought, wow, what'd they do? Run? You know, the one person said, well, sometimes they eat these things and they go away looking for water or, you know, whatever. And we're out in the boondocks there. So I thought, well, could they have gone away? And then after four more days, The smell was just awful. They had died in the house, in the walls, in the, you know.
Did you get them? No.
I couldn't get in there. You know, I wasn't going to crawl under the house and find them. And so we just waited about a week. Took about 2 weeks.
For the smell to go away?
I was burning candles. And, it was just gross. But it's over. Yeah. You know, now once every month or something, maybe you smell one little thing that goes away in 3 days. But in general, and I've been paying Clark's Pest Control for years, you know. They would set the traps, and those are gross, too. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, that's what we ended up doing. We had Corey and Alexi down here, at, like, in the middle of the night, you know, trying to get this rat, trying to catch him. We're all kind of screaming. And we finally broke down and put a trap and got it.
You know, even we have my boys, don't worry. They don't care about people. You know, they watch them get shot on the TV or whatever. Yeah. But a little mouse, a little rat, oh, my God. And they wouldn't kill them. They hated, nobody wanted to go to the traps. Nobody wanted... I came home from a football game one night and left my jacket, a really heavy jacket, on the back of the seat. And when I got up in the morning, one guy was curled up in the fur of the jacket, the rat. And so I'm like, Shondor, you know, come quick. And he comes down, and it didn't move, which was a clue that something was wrong with it. I mean, they usually run faster than I do when they see you. Right. And so Shondor comes down, no way. Oh, look, Mom, something's wrong. Its eye is all gone.
Hey, Shondor, so people don't know, he's your son. And
my
he's like,
son,
he played professional football with the 49ers.
Thirty-five years old. So he got a jar. And he put it into the jar,
so
and
he
took it
that.
To the cemetery and let it out in the wild of the cemetery. So about 2 months later, I'm upstairs in the bathroom. And, you know, without my glasses, I'm blind. So I'm up and went to the bathroom. I got my glasses off. And I reach over to wipe my hands on the towel, and the thing screams. It's the same rat with one eye back again. Then it goes, you know, and I put my hand on top of it, but it didn't move. It's laying on top of the towel rack on a towel. So I said, Shondor, this guy has either get a cage and make him your friend, or get him the heck out of here, you know. So he took him to Point Pinot. Took him on a long ride. And we've never seen him again.
You made it back to the house. How far was the cemetery?
The cemetery's in my, you know, I've got it like half an acre. You know how deep my
so
yard
it's
is.
Far
you know,
from
it's
you,
a,
but
not
still,
far, but it found its way back.
They have COM come back. Come back.
Two.
No, three. Miles.
I don't know.
You've heard that?
Yeah,
you mean that they'll return to a place as far as 2 miles away? Mm. Is that what you mean? You've heard that? Yeah.
Well, this guy found the place. I don't know what the story was.
Further than
was.
2 miles
yeah.
away. Yeah.
But now we don't have much. Every once in a while, I mean, usually now you hear one guy in the kitchen sometimes, and next thing you know, you smell something. So,
do you know how they get in? Is there, or it's...
We've tried, but probably the dog door.
Oh, you know. Right.
Lexi, when Lexi comes, kind of downstairs.
Hear that, Lexi.
Got some
tap.
Places to be fixed. Some open spaces.
Yeah. And... Yeah.
We have two dog doors that they can
L
come.
And P. Is it P? No, and O. P. Open. And open the S. No, W. Open the walls and get the carcasses.
No, that's all right. There, those the carcasses are, once they stop smelling, they might
no
as well
problem.
Go. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, but it certainly is better. And I took all my orchids out of the fish tanks, and they're blooming and not being eaten. They would eat the flowers. Mm. You know, that the whole stem that was growing was about to open into orchids. They know how to kill a guy.
Yeah.
You know?
S-E-E-C-Y-I. Have you on the show? He doesn't have to work very hard. You just sit back and off we go. And my and we have H O R R horror F A N fantasies. No, F A N fans. We have horror fans
from the old show.
No, is that what you mean? No. Do you know what he means? No. I B E I bet in I bet they can not T O top this H no this G R O gross.
Yeah, it was gross, believe me. When this, and you know, I went out and bought, I did everything. I bought metal cabinets so that they couldn't get to where there was food. So they said, well, if there's no food, that's what Clark said, you got to get rid of all the food. They started chewing the walls.
Oh.
The wood. The corners of the moldings on the doors, on the cabinets.
God.
Yeah. There was no stopping them. They were hungry. I guess. I don't know. It's,
wow.
Yeah. My neighbor, it's a problem out there. My neighbors tell me that everybody has the problem with them.
Yeah. Well, we have bird feeders, you know, and
that
we'll
I had
sit
to
there
stop it.
And watch
I
the
had
mice.
To stop it. That's right.
Snacking right in front of
and
us.
And the squirrels.
Yeah, well, the squirrels.
I mean, the squirrel empty it.
Yeah, that's what happens all the time. Yeah. We put that pepper in
it. I love to.
They put pepper in it, but you have to put like a whole package of pepper in there. We?
Well, I got those ones that are proof, you know, but they break.
Yeah.
The spring gets the spring gets sprung.
We moved. We had one of those, like, you know, box dove feeder things that we would sit in the living room and watch the birds.
I know. I love to watch them.
How
yeah.
wonderful. And the squirrel could just jump right, you know, just practically walk from the juniper tree into it. So, we figured out, how far can we move it from the tree so that Frank can still see it? Well, we moved it. Well, boy, was that squirrel giving us attitude. He would hang outside the window and just glare at us. Like, how dare you move that feeder?
When I would get them out on a string, but the rats could walk down the string.
Oh.
And you'd see them head down. Their faces into my granddaughter who has got real a lot of she's really got a lot of oomph, you know, and she's over there, she says, Nana, quick, get a broom, there's a rat in the bird feeder, you know. I said, oh honey, leave the little thing alone, you know, forget it, as long as they're outside. What are you talking about? She's got the broom.
But N, now, the squirrel, well, he lunges. Now what he does is he, you know, he calculates.
Jumps. They can jump.
And then he tips the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so cute.
They come, he comes all the way along the fence, from my backyard. You know, it's 300 feet down there where he stays in the trees down at the bottom, comes charging up along the fence, jumps up into the tree, that tree from the top of the fence off up onto the tree. The dogs used to go crazy. Felony used to go crazy over the squirrel. If he ever would have gotten that squirrel, that would have been, you know, he was dying for it.
Yeah.
But they know enough to stay up high.
Right.
You know, they're smart little guys.
Well,
so
yeah,
the rats
of them
are
that
smart
live in the backyard.
Too.
Yeah, they're fun to watch, but they're
yeah,
a nuisance.
No, they're
they dig all the veggies out that we plant. You know, no matter what we do.
They eat the fruit on the trees.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They love my fruit.
Yeah.
I've been trying to reconstruct my grandmother's garden from my youth, you know, her Italian gardens.
Oh.
Trying to have fig trees and
we just planted a fig
loquats
tree. We have a loquat
and everything, and they just raise havoc. They got my figs and everything.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I didn't have enough. I had to go buy figs to dry for my cookies.
When? Where? Is my G gun. That's what Frank said. Get me my gun.
One of my friends who says that he shoots, you know, the rats, that he's got a BB gun. He says he's got a grape. Grapevines, you know, a bunch of them. He's got a large place in Orinda. And he said they're just raising havoc with it. He had traps out there. He's got his gun. He goes nuts with them.
Yeah. My dad used to hunt squirrel.
Oh, yeah, when we lived in Mississippi. Everything that crawls and walks, we ate. Possum, squirrels, little raccoonies.
Yes,
I got used
too.
To it real quickly, but
Frank too,
because there wasn't anything else to eat down there. They went out hunting like 2-3 o'clock in the morning with the dogs. A couple of times the boys went, please stay behind those men. They were like 90 years old. Sam's uncles. Do not go running in front of them. Stay behind those guys.
S. Squirrel. S. T. E. Steak. Stew. You'd eat squirrel stew.
With brown sugar in it. Yeah, to sweeten it up, yes.
You said you liked squirrel, didn't you? Yeah.
By the time they finish with it, when they know what they're doing, you don't know what you're eating.
Yeah.
It is. It's in gravy and brown sugar. They put onions in it. Sort of like my mother used to make Swiss steak. You know, she'd lay the onions all on top of it and then put a gravy on it.
Yeah.
That's what that looked like. But there were other deer, duck.
Yes, Frank ate all
fish.
That stuff. Yeah.
Where is this? Texas, Frank?
Where was it that your dad was hunting? Was that when you were in Southern California? No. S. A. S. Q. Squirrels. O. Ohio. When
Ohio
you lived in Ohio
was
the squirrels.
And they have to go in the woods, yeah.
D. No, D. No, E. L. Elk. Utah. When he lived in Utah, yeah, he hunted elk.
Oh, what's her name? The Palin made moose very popular. I went to one of the therapists I worked with at the county hospital on my first job, who was older than I was already, but had gone to Columbia also. We had gone to the same PT school, and she died. Up in Alaska, her children took her up. She was disabled, and they took her up there, and then she had died. And the kids came and had a party here for all the people who had known her and everything. And they had brought moose dung earrings. They brought things from Alaska to give us as presents. You could take whatever you like. Moose dung earrings.
Whoa.
I'll skip that one. Yes. There were a lot of things by the natives that were made by the natives. Mm. And that.
D. D. E. E. Deer.
Deer, yeah.
And P. H. E.
Pheasant.
Pheasant.
My brother still hunts pheasant and and ducks in the
Where is he? In
he was the in Walnut Creek, and he still has his house there, but he became the chief of police in wait a minute. Galt, California.
Where is that?
It's above Sacramento, around there, Pleasant Grove, or you know, inland a little bit. And he lives there during the week, and then he comes home on the weekends.
Yeah. Wow.
To Walnut Creek. He's got about 5 more years, and he could retire from police work.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been the only one that took up the. My father was a commercial fisherman, and they all used to hunt in the hunting seasons, but duck and pheasant, anything that they could get. Geese, they would get. They bring home a big goose every now and then. Yeah, and he still does. I love pheasant.
Yeah.
Pheasant and polenta. That's what you used to. The sauce for polenta was always something wild and gamey. Gave it a little extra kick to the spaghetti sauce. You have to get fed. The other thing that brother still does is we used to hunt mushrooms in the hills, around here.
Wow.
And my father was the only one. We used to gather them, but you couldn't. He would decide which ones you kept and which ones you didn't.
Right.
But my brother learned the art, and he still hunts the mushrooms.
Wow.
You have to go on a rainy day, when the sun comes out the next day or whatever, early in the morning. And
wow.
Not too long ago, he made the spaghetti sauce with wild mushrooms. That's really very good.
Yum.
Not something you get too often. The ones you buy in the grocery store are tame.
Yeah.
We used to, when I was in Mississippi, they had a guy that came by from the state. He was a professor of agriculture and stuff, and he used to check and make sure that if you were preserving meats or smoking meats or putting up canning stuff, that you didn't kill yourself. He would check your pressure cookers and all that kind of
just
stuff.
Just any citizen, that's what he
through
did?
To come through the towns and stuff. Wow. His name was Professor Graves.
What decade was this?
Well, it was right when my husband died. I mean, it was before that. We used to go down, like, in summers with the kids, but after my husband died, I spent maybe 5-6 months there and then came back, after they tried to let them calm down a little bit. And that was 83.
Mm.
And he had a son that was a doctor here in San Francisco. And it was a very funny story, because one day I was in Mount Zion taking care of a kid with sickle cell, and he had told me his son was a pediatrician. And so I heard them page Dr. Bobby Graves on the overhead. Mm. So as he walked back from having taken the call, I'm sitting on the edge of a table waiting for him to finish with the patient. I said, "Are you Bobby Graves, Professor Graves' son?" I wish you could have seen the look on his face. Like, okay, how do you know Professor Graves? I was staying with Malcolm. Is my husband's son. Malcolm Battle was my husband. Everybody knew Malcolm because he could cook all that stuff. He had been a professional cook. And so a lot of the people that hunted even would take him camping with them, like on a 2-week camping trip or something. And then he would do the fireside, do the cooking of everything, that the half of what they hunted and things that they brought along. So he could cook all this stuff, and everybody knew him.
How did you, M, meet your husband?
County Hospital, Martinez. He had been there for 20 years and was working in physical therapy. And just one night, I was standing at the opera, and he was standing at the opera. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was Otello. He had gone to hear Otello, and I had just come back from school and didn't have tickets or anything, so I was standing. And I noticed that it was the guy from work. And then he started coming by, and this one thing led to another. Yeah. Seems like forever, you know. He's been dead 25 years, 26 years.
T R no R E C O I R E C I G O I got B A back on in T O touch with is this Ruth? It's somebody he went to high school with in San Bernardino County. And it was from the whole Roma thing. And, well, we were at the Cafe Roma, and somebody else who knew Frank from high school recognized him and told another friend that they had were both in high school, who still lives in Southern California, that she ran into Frank. So this is how Ruth and the person... it turns out she was very inspired by Frank. And when they were in school, she was one of the F R F E E few F no. One of the few R, A, radicals in
high school.
S. So we knew each other. We're friends. And so this was during that period when Frank was running for president, that they kind of got in touch by email then once she found out. And she was, like, really supportive of the campaign and, you know.
Did you travel around for the campaign?
It was all internet stuff. We did local. We did a lot of local things, like festivals. A lot of fun doing the various festivals. But she, S.A., said I was her
inspiration.
A hero. Yeah. She told Frank he was her hero.
I tell parents all the time, you know, about you, and always say, you just don't know what's in there until you can let it out somewhat.
But we, but then her daughter. Well, so what happens is that all happens, the election and everything, and then Frank gets an email from her daughter who said that her mother raised her, telling her about Frank and using Frank as an example of, you know, being who you are, going for who you are, and don't L, let them. D, E, define who you are. And so she's telling her friend, now she's on in a PhD program in Santa Barbara, and she said she talks about Frank to her friends, and now her friend is in a program about art and radicalism or something like that. And the friend wants to know if Frank will come and speak to their class
to the
at
class?
UC San Diego, Santa Barbara, yeah. So Frank found all of this out, you know, through these emails, and do a performance.
No.
And so he wrote to them and he said, you know, normally I would just say yes like that, but we just did two back-to-back Los Angeles performances that cost us a lot of money, and we just can't afford it. He said, so if, you know, I need to get help paying for it. So Ruth and her daughter, because he CCs everybody, you know, Ruth and the daughter write back and say, if they won't pay for it, we'll help finance it. Which Frank just started to cry when he got that email.
No.
I was like, whoa.
It was very interesting. This therapist that had been my friend, and I haven't seen her, and I used to get Christmas cards, and it took me 2 years, I guess, to realize I didn't get one from her, you know, that 2 years in a row. But a funny one is my husband and I never let people at work know that we were dating each other. We just didn't want any problems. And he had a friend who was going to marry us, but we had to work out a time that friend was going to be in town. He happened to be the mayor of Richmond, but he was a minister, and Sam and him had been friends for years. And I had promised that therapist that I would keep her three kids while she went to the APTA convention. Turns out that the night we got married, we had to have the kids. So for our honeymoon, you know, basically, although we didn't go anyplace, for our honeymoon, we had her three children. They were little, and I haven't seen them, maybe 20 years that I haven't seen the children. Of course, they're married and have children, and it made me feel so nice that they remembered that time, you know, that they spent with us and with my husband.
Wow.
And the daughter had named her daughter after my husband. Her name was Samantha.
Oh,
and
wow.
How they remembered him taking, we didn't know what to do. What did we know about taking care of kids? Sam used to take them around, you know, in Berkeley. We were living on Gilman Street then in Berkeley.
Oh, wow.
And there was a hot, sort of the little go-kart place was around from our house. It was 71, and there was a little go-kart place, and Sam, it was open till midnight. Sam would take them over there and put them in carts and pay for them to drive around the track. Otherwise, they'd be killing one another, the girl and the boy. The littlest boy was a baby, and we took them all to the baseball game. We went to the A's baseball game, and bought them everything they asked for and came home, and they were all vomiting.
No.
I thought, who knew? You know? Anyway, but they remembered it very, I had to think about it, you know, because it's so far removed from.
Yeah, wow. We don't know how, what effect we have.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
It was over 40 years ago when you were in high school.
No, that's right.
You find out 40 years later.
I have found it's kind of fun. We don't get together that often, but one friend from high school who was a close friend, we used to double date. My then boyfriend and I would double date with he and his girlfriend, and he opened a restaurant in Alamo. What is it? The one right after Walnut Creek, the first.
Orinda?
No.
Lafayette?
Going past, the other way.
Oh.
Towards Danville. I think it's Alamo.
Mm.
And he has an Italian restaurant there. It's a wonderful Italian restaurant. And so another friend who had been my boyfriend then and different ones, and we kept meeting there, and more of our high school friends meet us there, like once every 4 or 5 months or something like that. And we all eat dinner there and laugh. And this was hysterical. One of the guys, another person we used to double date with, was just a nightmare. He was the clumsiest, just a nightmare of a human being. But we had all gone to school since kindergarten together. So high school, you can imagine, we were in the Catholic school and then into the high school together. I had heard that he went to Vietnam, that he had been in college, and he went to Vietnam as a lieutenant, you know, after ROTC. And Russell, the guy who runs the restaurant, sent me an email, said he wrote a book. And so I went on, but not by his name. He had a different
name,
a pseudonym. And so I found the book, you know, with the thing, and it was called These Sacred Wounds or something like that. And it's this poor Italian boy, you know, who had been the youngest child of a change of life mother, you know, and was a nervous wreck kid from having been with him. And he gets into Vietnam, where it's like he's a Marine. You know, you can imagine, it's like everybody getting their faces blown off and things. We were all very protected. You know, we came from families and had our mothers cooked for us, you know, the fathers went to work and the mothers cooked. And he was just, it was incredible. He was wounded 3 times, he stayed there. But he learned, he finally realized that the guys who had been there the longest, it didn't make any difference if he was a lieutenant. It's better to listen to people. It was his lack of ego, I think, that made him survive the whole ordeal and what he saw. And he would listen to the people who had been there longer. And the first time, I could just see him, because I was in his car with him once when the car caught on fire. And he threw himself on the ground and was spraying water, you know. I mean, it's just... And so he gets into Vietnam, and he's got all his guns ready to go and everything, and they come under attack. And he's trying to say, oh, I can't, the gun won't fire, you know, all this. And the one guy who had been there, he said, Lieutenant, you need to take the safety off before you shoot the gun. It was like he had tried 3 different guns all with those safeties on. But it was hysterical when you're reading it and you knew him, you know, and you could just see him in this awful. And in the end, when he had to come home, he had seen people get killed 1 hour before they're about to get out of there. The only thing he could find that was coming home to California right away was the plane, the refrigeration plane with the bodies in it.
Oh.
He was not taking any chances. He took this plane home and, you know, came to Pittsburgh. And I was reading this book and thinking, and I said, I wonder if he remembers me. I mean, I haven't seen him since high school. I said, I wonder if he remembers me. And then he comes home to Pittsburgh, and he hasn't been there for, you know, 3 years or whatever. And he said, I wonder where Francine is.
Oh,
he said, maybe if I would have stayed here and tried to marry her, maybe I wouldn't be in the shape I'm in. And then I said, no, I would have probably had you, you know, protesting, getting your head knocked in. Here in the States.
Wow.
Anyways, he came to the restaurant. He was doing a book tour here, and so I got to see him. It was wonderful to see him. But he's he's still scarred. I mean, he's got like post-traumatic stress syndrome, and that when they would make, he didn't like for them to do flashes, people taking pictures, it all still bothers him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was a terrible thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I at least I know what some of whatever it was terrible.
How? L. I. Life. C. H. C. U. C. Y. Cycle. B. A. Back. On. It. Self. How life cycles back on itself. We reconnect with old people.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I like to go there. And a couple of the girls that I started coming to, and, you know, I made connections. And now we all have each other's email. So we can all communicate via the email. It's very nice, even if you don't go to the restaurant or... Yeah, well, I like email.
And G O O Google. Frank's computer went on the blink the other day, and nothing was working. So he could go online and Google. So he Googled himself. And, you know, whenever he does something like this, he comes up with all of these things. He's referenced in books and exhibitions and,
you know,
all these articles. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa.
One of my patients who's very paranoid called me up. She said, I think the school district is trying to get you. They've got all the contracts you signed with the school district under you and Google. I said, well, I don't know. I guess because it's a public record. If I sign a contract with the school district, I guess they can put it in there. She thought the school district was after me.
Oh,
I said, I don't think so. I think it's just a matter of public record.
Right. Do you know R E S E Research Magazine? Is that it? It's out of San Francisco. They put books out. It's like R E and then / I think search. They put a lot of books out. I don't know if they're still putting them out, but they were very popular that we knew of in the 70s, 80s. They would do it's like subculture. So they would do books about various subcultures.
Mm.
Very popular. And well, you know, of course, you know, I think at the beginning it was a guy and a woman. And I think it might just be the guy now. But they, of course, knew us or about us because we were kind of in the same circle. That was when we were doing the Outrageous Beauty Review in the Mabuhay Gardens in the 70s. So, like, everybody knew us.
Mm.
And, you know, so we were always kind of in the same, you know, and then over the years they would write books about, like, our friends and our peers, and people would always say, how come they don't do something about you, Frank?
Mm.
But it was like you could tell, because I freaked them out. Frank would say, because I freaked them out, because you could tell, you know, because you could just tell they were uncomfortable around us. And people would say, what do you mean you freaked them out? They write about, like, the outer reaches of culture. and you freak them out, you know. So they would think that was just Frank, like, imagining things.
Mm.
So he's Googling around, and the guy did an essay on the punk scene. This was written in, I don't know, I can't remember. But it was, I think it was like 99, I think it was. Yeah. So what is punk rock and how did it begin? Do you want me to read the start it out? Back in the 70s in San Francisco, life was a lot simpler. The punk rock Garden of Eden, where punk was born in San Francisco, was the Mabuhay Gardens on Broadway, the only venue in town that would dare host punk rock. Why? because the policy of Dirk Dirksen, who booked the FabMap, was to give anyone at least one chance without a preconceived restrictive aesthetic. The MAB was open 7 days a week with 3 to 5, quote, acts a night. So this was a lot of time slots to fill. This was before the rise of the DJ. Thus was created a nearly, quote, anything goes opportunity for anyone who came up with a live act. No other local club had this booking policy, and this is the reason San Francisco Punk started at the Mabuhay. One of the most unusual acts that played regularly through the first years of San Francisco Punk was Frank Moore's Theater. They have not gone down in punk history. It was whispered that Frank, along with his wife Linda, who struck me as a kind of Manson girl, headed a commune in Berkeley, and that everyone slept together in one huge bed. Their act seemed a bit, quote, creepy. Frank, confined to a wheelchair, had the wizened, twisted little body of a geek or spastic with flecks of drool on his clothing. He wore a headband with an antenna on his head that enabled him to communicate, usually in arrhythmic shrieks and yelps that were near impossible to decipher.
Well, that's one way to describe it.
But Linda seemed to understand him perfectly. She was his, quote, medium. Frank Moore's group, which looked like Manson Girl Runaways and Social Misfits, enacted bizarre performances incorporating rants, music, and dance that were definitely elementary enough to be, quote, punk rock, even though most punk rockers had difficulty processing the act and were puzzled, yet too baffled to show outright disparagement.
And this was in 1999?
I think he wrote this in 1999, but this happened in 1978.
Way before.
Yeah. Looking back, Frank Moore's show truly realized the punk credo of, quote, do it yourself / anyone can do it, unquote. Because if Frank Moore could do it, truly anyone could do it. He took the do it yourself, anyone can do it punk proclamation seemingly about as far as it could go. And then, yeah, it goes along, a longer article. T, A, talk. About at talk about a b a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yes. The whole thing, it's like you don't know, is he praising it or is he not, you know?
Yeah. He
did he have an agenda of some kind, almost like
he s T still is going through changes over it, freaking out, it seems. I said it was like the Cheryl, there was a disabled woman that was an artist who interviewed Frank for a show she did on cable access or that she hosted, Pamela. Yeah, S, A,
same thing,
time, P, period, as this article came out, right, she, S, A, saw the Outrageous Beauty Review, right, and when she came over, contacted us to do this interview, boy, she put Frank through it during the show. She was just really rough. And when the camera was off, she said begrudgingly and with a lot of attitude, just because I recognize that you were the man that was doing art as an artist, not as a disabled person, long before any other disabled person even thought of themselves as people, let alone art, and that you were the one that, like, laid the course for the rest of us. Doesn't mean I have to like what you do.
But, you know, I mean, this all brings to mind, I remember one time when you guys performed in the Village, and you brought back one of the reviews. And he was pleasantly surprised and said he thought it was going to be just some old hippie-like kind of a dippy thing, you know, and that the intensity of Frank and the program that he was very... he was very impressed with the show. That's why I'm saying to hear, he didn't see all that stuff that these people seemed to bring to the forefront.
Right.
He saw something more spiritual, in the situation.
When P, A, Pamela, W, she wrote a book, this was like a couple of years ago, and included Frank in the book, and a whole section on Frank. And that was very favorable. So she had somehow gotten over. She said she was so, it was such a big deal to her to come to our house that day. She came to the house to interview Frank. That she doesn't even remember it. She said, "I don't even remember what I said to you. I don't remember
how I acted." But she
doesn't
want to. Yes.
Yeah. So that, and then she was on the show
blank that
promoting
out
her book
in your life.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, she seemed to have gotten over it and was very positive about Frank.
Like the things you do sometimes, and you just rather you didn't do it.
People would rather they didn't.
Anybody, you know, you have those things that you wish you wouldn't have been that impulsive, or you would have acted a little differently.
Oh.
I always have one, I read a passage in Nietzsche once that sort of made me feel better about all that stuff. He said, well, you know, you have to have gone through what you went through to get to where you are. And if you're happy with where you are now, then what you did through that other period was all right. Sort of like he said, it's like a brook, you know, and the birds, the excrement, everything goes into it, and then eventually it all falls to the bottom, and you can see through to the clear water to the top.
Don't R-E-V regret. Don't regret anything.
No, that's right. I mean, you don't regret. I mean, that's because we never killed anybody. Basically, you did were just things that could have been better.
Yeah.
But,
what? A, B, the article? Oh, the other stuff? Oh, Chuck? Well, he wanted me to also show you this. So we had these two LA trips. The second one, the one we did in January, was this annual Hollywood Performance Marathon. It was the second time we had did it. It's this theater in Hollywood, Theater of Note, and every year they do this. It goes like from 3 in the afternoon till like 4 in the morning. And everybody does like these 10, 15-minute acts. And the guy invited Frank a couple of years ago. He was just like trying to find interesting people. He found Frank on the internet, invited him. And, you know, we really blew everybody away at this festival when we did it. And so he invited us back.
Who does it now? Who do you have, the other people who do the act with you, or is it just you guys?
Well, for that, when we travel, it's the three of us, and Jen came with us this last time, so it was the four of us. So we're all in, but then we have other people. Like Frank has a whole L.A., Southern California contingent of, you know, very high-end, very high-end musicians who jump at the chance to play with Frank. And so we always have a nice band. So it's a band. It's called Frank Moore's Tarotic All-Star Band. And the band's always different. No rehearsal. It's improv. And then it was Jen and Frank and I are naked and dancing erotically and doing vocal stuff. And Frank's always directing it, so you never know exactly what's going to happen. Sometimes he'll have us get the audience or get the band, which means basically you go up to each person and, you know, you just kind of cuddle with them. But this is after they've been watching us dancing erotically, and either, like, people just, like, love it or, you know, do this. Most of the time they love it, but in this one, he was telling us to get people to come up. He said, bring people up to me. That's what he had us do. I did I.O. only H.A. had 30 minutes. Usually we do this for an hour. So this for us is a condensed version. So he was trying to move
to
things along.
To reach the people that came in. Yeah, do it quick.
And he had tried to get a plant. He had so that they would be in the audience and be kind of straight and be so moved and inspired that they would take their clothes off and dance with us erotically. But he wasn't able to get anybody. So, but there was this woman that worked at the hotel that we stay in, Sam, who was very, you know, knew about Frank already, had, you know, read about him in books and stuff. And so she was real excited that we were staying at the hotel, and she was real interested in hearing everything. And so when he invited her to be a plant, and she couldn't get off from work. So here we are bringing people up, and one of the women we brought up looked just like her. And, you know, it's dark, and there's strobe lights and stuff, and so, but anyway, this is, I'm just to, I guess, give you an idea of what the performance was like. And she basically did what the plant would have done. We ended up taking her some of her clothes off, and it had this cathartic thing where the audience just like went crazy and applauded. But and she was sitting on Frank's lap and dancing, and you know, Frank thought it was Sam, you know, at first. But so this is like, and you know, they do an intermission after us, because people just have to like kind of like, you know, and
take a deep breath.
We and then and there were 10 people, like up, yeah, like we had about
came
10
up
people
on the stage.
And they all stayed and they started dancing with each other, and it really turned into like a whole really amazing,
it
amazing
caught.
Thing. It really was amazing. Yeah. Oh, and only. He only had 30 minutes to do it, too, and it, like, totally worked, you know. And it's and the music is amazing, the band, it's, you know, it's just a... And then there's slides projected on the naked bodies and strobe lights. And so it's visually, it's beautiful. And it's slides of our, like, 40 years of performances. So you see all different things...
All those people.
...on our bodies. It's
and
just, like, really beautiful.
I remember the time you guys came by the house, and you... had been on TV, and you were body painted.
Ah.
My kids almost had a heart attack.
So, Frank, so we get back, and Frank gets this email. Subject, Theater of Note, that's the name of it. Theater of Note Show. Dear Frank, my name is Chuck Kaufman. My girlfriend and I came out to support the Theater of Note's all-night fundraiser. We attended an art opening in Silver Lake and then had sushi in West Hollywood. Between us, we had just enough money to see Adler's Appetite, a great rock show at the Key Club, or go and support the Theater of Note and live theater. Honestly, I wanted to rock out to some metal. But we ended up choosing Theater of Note and settled into an overpacked theater after laying down our $40. We saw the anti-Jesus piece. That was okay. I wasn't overly impressed. Then a very funny guy came out and did a spoken word rant, which was intelligent and funny. That was cool. The lights came up. We moved to better seats and settled in for the next skit. The lights went down, and it was the Frank Moore performance. Honestly, Frank, your performance is the single most revolting and nauseating live performance I've ever witnessed. It was a... It was a scarring experience. I'm better now. My girlfriend, having been exposed to multiple theater performance, etc., and experimental shit, and therefore was not as affected as me, I did not know who you were. I did not know or understand that the guy in the wheelchair was Frank Moore. Your cast put the mic on you. I realized it was you. I made it through the gig. Quite a few did not and had to excuse themselves. The next morning, I thought about my experience and your performance and concluded that your confinement and situation has not trapped your ability to communicate and to create. I applaud that. What must be a glimpse into your soul and mind frightened and sickened me. I applaud your ability and gumption in getting it out there, making it happen. However, a mind as crisp as yours managed to disgust me and turn me off, not on. I'm glad I experienced a glimpse into the mind of Frank Moore, but he, W, wrote this email, and C and F, O, found my email address. So he had to do a little work to even do this. But saddened, it was not much to see, and little, if any, inspiration for anything to me. What art did you exhibit? It's a free country, man, but come on. I dig your website. I dig the underground anti-corporate thing. Maybe Lover will inspire me some way. Maybe some good will come from having subjected myself to your, quote, performance. I hope so. I busted my ass for that $40. Sincerely, Chuck Kaufman. So, see, read. So Frank said, thanks, Chuck, for writing your response to my piece. We artists live for such letters, especially when the reactions to the art is so intense and powerful as yours. It means the art is working. I sympathize with you about spending your hard-earned money, even though the note is a worthy cause, and missing the metal show to boot. Doing the show cost me several $1,000s. We live in Berkeley. On the way down, our transmission crapped out, and on the way back, the tire exploded, blowing a hole in the car's body. That is over the normal cost of travel, hotel, food, etc. I like how you are aware that you are continuing to work through my piece and that the piece is continuing to work inside of you. I have had people who hated my performance right after who have come back years later and say the performance had a profound and positive effect in on their lives. That is how art works. So hang in there. What exactly made it revolting and nauseating and scarring and disgusting? And in what ways? I'm glad you checked out the websites. In Freedom, Frank Moore. So, and then Chuck wrote back.
Oh.
Let me find Chuck's response. Oh my. I don't think we have Chuck's response, but I can get it. All right. Okay, so there's Frank to apply. All right, so he says, hey Frank, thanks for your reply. I appreciate that. I knew when your associates wheeled you out that the piece wasn't going to be mundane performance. They put the mic on you, but you couldn't communicate the way I am used to being communicated with. I had a flood of thoughts, emotions, compassion, sadness, empathy. And when the projector started and the nude older dancers began their, quote, lap dances, and the movement of your arms, head, and face, it hit me. I felt sick. It was too much. A writhing contortion of nudity, eroticism, combined with a man confined to a wheelchair, your body movements, head, face, arms, hands, and your groans and sounds, that brought on the nausea. I had to look away at the wall occasionally to keep it together. I was revolted because I didn't understand it, and it was making me feel physically and emotionally sick. Scarring was too much of a word. How girlfriends say I live in a world of hyperbole, so I exaggerate sometimes. It was a very strong piece. Yes, I am trying to work through it. I really appreciate your writing me back. Thank you, Chuck. And then Frank wrote, Chuck, I like how the performance is continuing through these emails, but don't get in a dark alley with Linda and Jen, those, quote, older women. So why did seeing nude, quote, older dancers dancing erotically with on me evoke such powerful reactions in you? Quote, I felt sick, brought on the nausea. I had to look away at the wall occasionally to keep it together. I was revolted because I didn't understand it and it was making me feel physically and emotionally sick. That's the quote. Was it my voice? What if the wheelchair were just a prop? Was it because the dancers were, quote, older? Would it be different if the dancers were younger? What does your girlfriend think of your reactions? What did you think of the women from the audience who danced on me? Was she older? How old are you?
That's funny. The same question I just asked Frank.
How old is he?
He?
Funny, for decades I got shit for cute younger women around me. I also have gotten shit for having strong women around me, as if it was a fetish of mine. And now it's older women. They are the same girls. Linda has been with me for about 30 years. Jen has been in my work since 2001. Actually, to me, they are younger women because I'm older. It's relative. It appears my work has started addressing issues of ageism. About time. Keep writing, Frank. And then I think that's where he hasn't answered to that. He hasn't replied to that one. But Frank got all these other replies. So the first one he got was, this is from Steve Davis. Now, Steve is someone that has gotten us shows in L.A., has been playing with Frank for a bunch of years. He's based in L.A.
One of the people in the band.
In the band. And he does a band called Dog, which is a noise band. So it's like them smashing chains on car fenders and... You know, it's a very intense thing that, you know, a lot of people have to walk away from.
The ballet had
well.
A piece like that the other night. I went to the ballet.
Had a noise piece?
I don't know what it was. I was falling asleep and I jumped out of my skin. the first note I took. I was like, I leaned forward to see what could be playing that music, and there was no one in the pit. It was broadcast. It was a recording.
Thing.
And it was electronic in nature, whatever it was. But I don't know if I could have listened to it just by itself. The dancing made it, you sort of could put it back a little bit. Because the dancers were, they looked like they were doing an aerobic workout of some kind. And it was a very artful aerobic, you know, workout. And so it was very nice to watch. And so you sort of got it. But it was interesting because one of my patients had been there. And she's very hard of hearing. And she said, wasn't that last piece just terrible? And I said, well, I think it was some kind of electronic music. That's what my niece said. She's younger. She was with me. And she said, no, I'm sure they were firing cannons. Gee, I didn't hear any cannons. But it was that kind of intense. At some points it was intense, and then it would stop.
Yeah.
And the absence of sound after that intensity of sound was like
right. Yeah. Should I read Steve's next? So Steve wrote back because he got sick and couldn't come, and he's a guy that never doesn't come. So he was like, it was not an easy thing for him to not come, and then this happens. So he goes, fucking fuck my fucking ass, Frank. I was sick as fuck, but I am now sad as shit for not dragging myself there to help ruin that idiot's night. I guess you've heard it all, huh?
That would have made him turn his face to the wall.
I guess you've heard it all, huh? I know I have, doing Dog. I love you even more, if that's possible. And yeah, can I email that guy and thank him or just let it go? Take care, Steve. So, and then Frank wrote back to that. Okay. Frank wrote back. I love you too, Steve. Yep, you missed an opportunity to expand the fragile world of this guy and of those whom he represents. But don't blast him yet. He offers a rare peek into how the art works, what pushes what buttons, etc. He is willing, able to enter into dialogue about his responses to the work and how they are evolving over time. Most are not willing or able, so I want to pump him and do some educating. And then he said, yeah, it's not worth it to point out that he's an idiot. I really, quote, enjoyed his email, though. So that was that was the end of that thread. And then John the Baker, who is another punk musician that we met in North Carolina when we did a festival there, and he was performing too. And who... R-A-R-A-N 500 miles away, so he wouldn't have to come to Frank's performances at that festival. And then emails Frank when we get back home and tells him everything. Tells him all the changes he went through over just the thought of going to Frank's performance at this festival.
And how did he know Frank?
We met him there. He was like the first performer the night we got there.
We
didn't know him, you know, but we liked his. He was like really dynamic, you know. So we ended up sitting out on the sidewalk with him like for hours through the middle of the night, just because we hit it off and we were talking. And
then he was afraid to come.
And then he was afraid, but we didn't even know he didn't come. We didn't, you know, there was so much going on. Who noticed, you know, except he emailed. And there were two things Frank did there. So he was trying to avoid both of these events. And so that's how we met him. But since then, he's moved back. He's moved here because of us and has lived here for, I don't know, 10 so or so years. Opened up a club in Richmond that we performed at many times. And so we have like an ongoing relationship with him, and he plays in Frank's band from time to time. So this is his, and he's on this like eSalon thing, so all these people read stuff and then can comment. So he quotes from Chuck's letter. I'm glad I experienced a glimpse into the mind of Frank Moore, but saddened it was not much to see and little if any inspiration for anything to me. What art did you exhibit? It's a free country man, but come on. So that's what John is responding to. When someone reacts like this to your artistic expression, it is art. It's like the tree falling in the forest. This time we are certain that someone was there and they did hear the tree fall. It doesn't matter that the tree fell so close to the guy that it scarred him. It fell, it was heard, and a reaction to it was a result. A deepening process ensued, and the guy, one way or another, will be different, changed because of it. I know, because I was one of those guys who was scared of Frank and his performance, and I still stand by him 10 years later. If you think about it, have you ever wanted to get a girl's clothes off but just couldn't think of the right words to say? Well, think about how hard that is for Frank. He can't form words. If that is not inspiring enough, for how many centuries have painters painted nudes? Well, this is a different kind of nude. Watch the performance on your computer and let the colors and bodies blend together and see the collage of brilliance swirling, bending, blending, and spilling. If the great painters of years ago saw what Frank is doing, they would all sit at his feet. As a punk rocker, I am always trying to find ways to get people to leave or feel disgusted or piss them off. I want people to break out of their shells, open up to alternatives, and loosen the shackles of society. Frank did that to me without hardly trying. He is a natural punk. My two cents.
A natural punk. I like that.
And then I think Frank wrote back to John. Ah, yes. His writing his email in itself refutes that he didn't get much anything from the piece. You and I, and most of us on the eSalon, do culturally subversive art, not Hallmark art. We live for such strong reactions, responses, not for polite clapping of liking. Mm. What you say means a lot to me. Visually and musically, what the jams evoke are amazing, which have less to do with me than with the combination of people coming together in the work. And then I add my advanced punk tools. And then, and then this was a reply to that by another guy on the East Salon who's a poet that we've known for many years, but not that well, but, you know, as a fellow artist. So he writes back, Frank, what impresses me most is how you gently eased this guy into your mindset. He's obviously intelligent, or it would have never gotten past the first email exchange. But you didn't just let him stay on his side, the safe side. No, you cajoled him into experimenting with the idea, a first step in my view. And through your own wit and intelligence and gentle nature, persuaded him that what he was repulsed by was inside himself. Many of my so-called enlightened friends couldn't do that. It's a special gift, and I applaud you for it. Rain dog. And then we have two other replies. This is a guy in Montreal who we met. He's a audio collage artist, and he contacted Frank because of our internet station Lover, wanting us to pay him for his music. And Frank said, "Hey, dude, we don't do that." So then it was like, "Okay, well, I'll just give it to you." But then he got turned on by Frank's running for president and really liked what Frank had to say, and ended up doing this sound piece using audio from Frank's platforms. We had on YouTube like Frank's platform where I would read what Frank had written, and which we then put as a soundtrack to a slideshow from one of the events we did. So it's, you know, it's a really neat piece. But
is it still on?
It's up on the website. We could send
it's
you
on
the.
YouTube, yeah.
Oh, it's on YouTube, right?
What, do I just look under Frank?
Yeah, I have to. I can't remember what it's called.
Maybe we could send you the link. Yeah. So we haven't heard from him since the election, and that piece came out, and it's played on BTV, and, you know, but we haven't heard from him. So this is him. He's on the East Salon. So this is him responding to this whole theater. No, first we've heard from him. Hey, Frank, it's Raphael Alexander from Montreal. Been a while. I was hibernating for the past 3 months, but now I'm back in a better and improved form. Well, as I receive regularly your East Salon emails, I received the one featuring this guy, Chuck. Once I remember...
Does he know he's on all this?
Chuck? No. He certainly does not. And he's also on a blog that we have. Once I remember seeing... H-E... Hey, I did not ask him
to email you.
To email.
But he exposed himself to such depth.
So he said, once I remember seeing that video of yours on Weibo or YouTube that was taken out by the site for pornographic content or, quote, violation of site's viewable content or something like that. Can't remember. L.A. Last. It was the Last L.A. show we put up. It was on Vio, right? And, I mean, this Vio, I mean, some of the stuff they have that we is like extremely explicit sex stuff, extremely. And we put up the video of our, the December Los Angeles thing, and they took it right down as pornographic. So even though we wrote to them and we said, hello,
well,
you know what?
Didn't Jesse declare that you, Jesse Holmes?
Yeah, that's what he investigated Frank for obscenity and couldn't prove his case. two investigations by the GEO. So he said, the whole I can't remember. The whole thing made me smile. Mm-hmm. It actually was bizarre and very experimental. You know, I'm sympathetic to this kind of art because anti-mainstream. For the rest, you can't judge art for being what it is. It is made to destroy boundaries, while yours is, according to me. What I mean to say, Frank, is that, one, your art doesn't hurt anyone. You're not promoting hate or violence toward anyone or any ideals. Indecent? Okay. But there is far worse things out there, degrading human dignity. You guys are all major, legal, and consenting. Where's the problem? Two, you are destroying boundaries. Three, but most important, you're destroying prejudices against people seen as outcasts by, quote, normal people. And by normal, who in the hell is normal anyway? Would anybody like to be normal, like clones generated upon a standard of what a human being should be ideally? Sure, I live in the Matrix, but how many people cannot see the outside of the Matrix? How many are doomed in ignorance and being sheeps all their lives? Too many, Frank. And too many abandoned their dreams and declared forfeit and joined back the Matrix. So I think you're doing the right thing in pursuing this debate with Chuck. Your performance art is not a freak show. Courage pour la suite, cordialement, Raphael. And finally, the last one is this guy, Mark Sodden, who is also a musician, and he does, like, noise kind of stuff, but he also does very straight, I can't remember the kind of music he does, but, you know, he's a real, you know, decent guy. And he said, "Hi, Frank, I was reading Steve's post, and I wanted to present a different position. Not to be an apologist for the guy that had a physical reaction to your performance, but we are all wired a bit differently, and where some people would be curious, fascinated, or aroused, others could be threatened, overwhelmed, and challenged. I think you may have gotten more from your performance than a person that is more tolerant / jaded, where it might just be another event in their field of vision. His response has given us a lot to chew on in the e-salon. I applaud him for his willingness to share his reaction. Yeah. He didn't have to step up and share his feelings. Thanks again for providing a forum for these discussions, Mark." Mm-hmm. So. No. Five. G. R. A. $5,000 was... was worth every penny. The $5,000 it cost us was worth every penny just for all that.
Did you get the car fixed? Or was
well,
it
funny
a total?
Enough, yeah, funny enough, the transmission. You know, we just got a cell phone. We never had a cell phone, but we wanted a phone for the trip. That's why we got it, so we'd have a phone for the car trip. And the transmission started going out on the trip up there, the Grapevine. So we had our mechanic on the phone with us. These are great, amazing guys, Henry's, all three of them on the phone. And the one mechanic, in the course of trying to help us, was Googling it because he couldn't find anything about these two lights that were coming on while our transmission wasn't, like, was skipping as we were going uphill. Yeah. He Googled it, and he said there was a class action suit against Honda. Your car, the year that you had it,
wasn't that
it was
nice.
A bad transmission. And he said, "But I think because you're not the original owners, it probably doesn't apply to you. But I think, you know, that's where we, when we get," he said, "if you just drive gentle and slow, you'll get home okay." And so the whole time we're
especially
in LA,
downhill,
we're thinking, you know, we have to get back. So it turned out, though, Corey got on the, when we got back, Corey got on the internet. And it turned out that we were like a month beyond the expiration date of the class action suit. So we called Honda and El Cerrito, and they said they have this, what is it called? Good something.
Goodwill.
A goodwill clause that if you, that will consider covering it. So they paid for like 75% of the repair and put a new transmission in.
Oh, wow.
Do you need a, I think we need to take a piss break.
Yeah.
Be right back.
I can tell that the piss break vibe. Okay, I'll be back.
The choir at Pomona University. She's on YouTube with the a cappella group. I mean, I just That's another place I like to go and listen.
Yeah. Let's see. Is that okay? P? Mm-hmm. Pull up. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey, Mikey.
You?
Mm-hmm. S.
Usually?
Mm-hmm.
Can?
Mm. L.
Mm. A. Last for the 2 hours? You usually can. Didn't quite make it. Well, we actually started. We were in here earlier. Usually we just wheel in at 8 o'clock, but we were probably here closer to 7:30, so... M, U, was it U?
Mm.
U, R, A,
mm.
G, good, a good,
mm.
L,
I,
V, A, E, R, liver,
mm.
You are a good liver. What are the, what are your,
mm.
S, E, mm. Secrets?
Good liver?
You like, you live
yeah.
Good. You know, you have the art of
being. Not too long ago, my brother, the policeman, said to me, he said something like, you seem to just let everything float off your back.
Mm.
And that, that he can't free. He was having trouble with his a disagreement with his son, and he just couldn't let it just run. I said, well, I like living with my kids. I like the boys at home. I don't see much of them. They're some come home late at night or in and out. They cook for themselves. They're sort of just whatever. And I just feel like you have to seek an equilibrium at some point. Nobody wants to be fighting.
Mm.
At least I don't. I don't want to live around unhappiness or fighting. It's easy for me. I make up my mind, this is what I want. It could be like this, it could be like that, it could be a little of this, and that in order, you have to have it. You have to go someplace in the middle. So I guess I'm a great compromiser. In terms of
and you have F, you have fun.
Yeah, and I still, you know, one, a lot of the doctors say to me sometimes, don't you ever get burned out, all these poor people, you know, like, but I don't. Because it's always exciting to me. I have a little girl that I've taken care of for 3 years now. She took 2 steps the other day. I thought I was going to die and fall on the floor. I stood her up again, and then she took four steps, you know. Wow. And it's exciting. It's still exciting to me to see it. Yeah.
I don't understand be you burned out, the idea
no.
burned out.
No, or, you know, it's very hard to find to find people who want to work in the schools with the disabled kids or, you know, in the with the babies. I have about six therapists. The turnover is tremendous. I just break them in and then they decide they don't want to do it, you know. And so the same thing, it's like drooling and it's baby drool.
Wow.
You know, it's not a big deal to me. It never has been.
That there F R A frame R S so F fragile. Their frames are so fragile.
Or they rather do things like, athletes or the other end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. One of the docs I've been working in cancer with for years, and we've published books and everything, and he said, well, you know, there's a whole side of wellness. Exercise for cancer patients was our thing, and now they actually prescribe it almost as a prescription for if you're sick, exercise. It's the thing to do. It's good for you. And he said, you know, we should write maybe about wellness. And I say, well, I'm not interested. I mean, I understand what wellness is, and healthy people can just go exercise. Yeah. They need a guide maybe or something, but it's not the same as the kind of motivation it takes for sick people to exercise or to be told that it's okay, that they, even if it doesn't feel perfectly okay this way, to do it anyways or to walk or to do the something that you can do. It's a frame of reference that
There you go. Guest appearance. A. If they are T. U. R. Turning. Turned off by drool. Why did they get into medicine?
Yeah, well,
into the medical profession?
But maybe that's the athletics, the athletes, then you don't deal with that aspect. You're dealing with the superlative. But not too long ago, and one of the little boys I took care of that had muscular dystrophy was made fun of in his little Boy Scout troop because he had to have a ride up to the top of the mountain. He couldn't walk to the top, but they kept him and drove him up in the golf cart or whatever it was. And I guess some of the kids didn't understand why he was getting, because he doesn't look that bad yet. And so they couldn't understand it, and so they kind of got him behind the bathroom and roughed him up. The nice Boy Scouts. Anyways.
Oh my God.
So he didn't want to make anything of it. He wanted to forget about it. He didn't want to talk about it, but his parents were upset, and when he eventually told them, and I spoke to the troop. I was invited to speak to the troop. He said to me, I said, is there anything you don't want me to say? You know, what do you... He said, well, don't make me sound too bad. He's 14 years old. It's a bad age. Yeah. And so when I got in there, I thought about it. I said, well, you know, there's disability all the way to ability. Mm. You know, I said I had two sons whose abilities were superlative. They could jump higher, run faster, do than everybody. I said, but that's on a plane of ability. And then there's kids who can't, you know. And I said, there's some very normal ones in the middle someplace. You could see kids laughing at one another in the thing, you know, whose abilities are not in the superlative range. And, you know, that maybe feel it necessary to laugh at somebody. They've got to find somebody a little less than what you are to pick on. But afterwards, I said to the father, when I, by the questions that they asked, I knew they didn't want me to address, they didn't want to bring names out, the boys who had actually, I could tell who the boys were. I knew who the two were that had roughed him up by the time the night was over.
By the way they reacted.
Just by what they reacted and what they had to say and stuff. But, and I think that's the...
Give. Give them. Give them to me.
Yeah. Listen, I would have liked to. Believe me. That was my feeling. And so I would have liked to have really gone into them. But
I would. Rough them up.
Yeah. One time when I was in the middle school is the worst of it, and I had a kid in a wheelchair that ran a power chair, but he wasn't real good at running it. And they thought it was very funny to get him stuck in the elevator and send him to the basement, and then he couldn't figure out how to get out of there. And I'm looking for him, and I finally find him just in tears, you know. And fine, because I'm looking for the elevator, and we find it in the basement and get down there. And when he told me what happened, I mean, I was like, the principal was not happy with me. I said, I wanted to know. I wanted him, you know. I felt like, give me just 10 minutes with him.
My high school, P-O-N, only the T-O, top students could push the W,
the wheelchair.
S, so it was a H O N
honor.
Yeah.
Nowadays, that doesn't. That's part of the thing. Nobody deals with honor. In schools, you don't hear that word even come up most of the time. Maybe there are schools someplace. When Nino went to Los Gatos, there was a little more of that because they didn't have to deal with the social problems that you do in the public schools, like in San Francisco and Oakland and Richmond. It's unfortunately. They have enough just to make everybody walk through the hallways and get where they're going. But
I and it was E Q U equal. It was equal. Between you and the person pushing your chair.
Yeah. Well, that's every kid, and that's the trick, is for somebody to find some friends like that. And usually they can find one or two you know, that are like that. Somebody who will write the notes for them in the classes or, you know, help them. And that they have fun. But it's not easy. It takes a little while for them to make friends. It's always something that they can write in these programs for them, but you can't make them make a friend. It's got to happen, no matter what you do.
In they, that was after, always, easy
for you.
For me.
Yeah. Yeah, well. But mentally, you are normal. I don't care what they say about what goes on. You are. It's like when I asked you, well, when did you know you could read? And you said, always. And you just knew the letters and you recognized them. And yeah, that's different than some. But there are. But as I said, now with the computers and stuff, it really helps a lot of the kids. They just have to recognize a picture. They don't have to recognize letters and all that kind of stuff. They can go to the picture very easily. But it is harder for kids that don't have as much going for them to make the friends.
I N E never G got never got R roughed up.
Yeah. I'll bet. My boys still talk about your screaming at them when they were being sassy and arms flying that they thought they better get out of the way of. And they weren't easily intimidated. Yeah. It just was the power of the presence.
N K I T T Kitty, our cat, S, T, O, stopped, doing, B, A, bad, right. So the cat, you know, who's always terrorizing the other cats, if he's in a room with Frank doing it, Frank can get him to stop by doing that. And Frank will always laugh after the fact and say, as if I could get up and do anything. But somehow, you know, he's able to overpower him just with his vibe.
I know. Yeah.
I don't know how you do it. You don't know how it works.
Well, it's just got the sound to it.
And you have an intensity
the
about
intensity.
You, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you're very focused and intense. So when you turn it all to it, I think if you know people can feel that. So it kind of overrides thinking like, oh, what could he actually do to
me? Yeah, that's right.
Because they can feel. And the thing is, it's actually accurate because you know you can figure out. He's really good at figuring out ways to get somebody who's giving
control
him a hard time.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know he'll override the physical limitations with his imagination and what he comes up with.
Well, it's like the same thing with my boys. I mean, although we used to fight more when they were littler, but as they got bigger, I mean, it was obvious if they wanted to, they could kill me, you know? I mean, they could, but the fact that I began to realize that they didn't want to, you know, became a place where we could, I could control them finally without having to fight with them, but to speak and to get them to do what reasonable people would do. And that was a big change in our relationship overall. Took a while.
Oh, you, our, be, oh, boy, d, oh, did, is it did, d, I, s, disowned us, we told you that, our koala disowned us like over a year ago.
Was he the, became a chiropractor?
An acupuncturist. And his wife also is an acupuncturist. They have a, you know, a practice together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I think what he basically said to us is like the whole process that we have of talking about things.
Yeah.
He didn't want to expose his wife and in-laws to. Oh. He wanted to protect them from that. He doesn't want to look at things in that way. I mean, that's basically what he said. Isn't that right?
Well, in that time when the doctor at MaxiCare, you guys used to take him to
Jeff Mandel.
And he said, "How do you deal with all the people that you live with?" And well, Frank. You know, Frank, I remember Frank saying, "Well, what about your mother? why me? I'm the worst thing you live with." Yeah. So it always was, I think he couldn't be honest with what he really felt about the whole situation.
Yeah. He wanted to be
regular,
like a normal,
regular.
And you know, it's like his in-laws bought a house, a duplex. So they moved up from Southern California. They live in one part of the house. He lives in the other part of the house. He's got this very normal situation. And, you know, they're the grandparents that will raise the kid. And I think we, you know, the possibility, when we found out that his father-in-law was a notary, and that was right around the time we were trying to arrange the electors thing. And we said, and they were moving up here. So we said, you know, perhaps he would be interested, you know. I mean, so innocent, really, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really big deal to him. Like the thought of having him meet us and, you know, it was like he would say things like when we told him that Corey and Alexi had done a holiday segment because we needed a filler. For one of our public access shows, and we were doing a Christmas special. So they ended up, we said, do something at the Blue House. So they end up, in the end, dancing around naked to Christmas music with these little Santa puppets on their genitalia. I mean, it was a riot, you know. It was just really cute, and we were rolling on the floor laughing. So when we told him about it, he said, well, what about their coworkers? What if somebody saw that on TV? I said, oh, they tell everybody. You know, it's not like, what if they saw it? They tell everybody. He says, I don't think, you know, my father-in-law would understand that, which we weren't even talking about his father-in-law. It was like, that was the kind of thing. It was like, he just didn't want that, like, kind of reality to be part of his reality. Because he blamed, it was all our fault. You know, that's why he had to estrange himself.
That's what the conversation was that my brother and I were having. That's how it is with kids. It's all your fault, everything that happened. And my brother at least has a wife, so they could be mad at two people, you know. But I'm the only one,
right.
So I mean, the buck stops here. I mean, Nino, they look back at me. I never thought anything of it. I mean, Nino... In the mornings, I was trying to get three kids out of the house, four kids, and I would grab him and stick him in the shower in front of me and turn the faucet on, wash his hair, wash his body, and throw him back out with a towel and then finish my shower and then run. I was like, oh, you made me shower with you. Made you. I was like,
whoa.
You know, he looks back on it and it isn't, it isn't okay, you know, that
right.
I wasn't trying to molest him.
Oh, Lord.
You know, I was trying to get everybody showered and out of the house.
Right. Wow.
And different things. That's right. They all look at what you did and...
Yeah. I... Could...
Add a little religion
should.
To it.
All right. I should. I... Even... Always... Get...
The blame.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's been all the years we've been together, everything we've done, it always ends up being Frank's fault. Yeah.
Well, I always just say, I know, really, I don't think I knew what I was doing, but I just did the best I could. I wish I would have known now, you know, known then what I know now. I would have maybe done better. A job at what I did, but I just didn't know any better. I just did the best I could, usually in frantic running 90 mile an hour mode.
That's that regret thing again.
But I don't. I just did the best I could. That's it.
Yes. And D. R D E A deal with deal with it.
That's what Cecil Williams always used to say at Glide Church. Hell, you're 35 years old now, don't you? You're 40 years old. Doesn't make any difference what your parents were.
Right. Move on.
Here you go.
Yeah. We are you running out of time. Right. Went really fast. Yeah. Who are you? Your name.
It's still just a very peaceful person. I always said someday I hope to be in, I love my home, I love my garden, I like my orchids, I love my kids. I just hope I can just be there. And, you know, I like, probably not going to be able to work too much longer, but I hope 4 or 5 more years. Crawling around on the floor after babies. As long as I keep the smaller ones, I can. And to have my grandchildren, it's lots of fun. But I'm not responsible, you know. Then they, their mothers and fathers come and take responsibility for them. So it's fun to be with them, but not to be responsible for them.
Yeah. And your name is
Francine
Manuel.
RPT.
That's right. Two.
I guess that's pretty inseparable from who I am.
The S T A R stars to the stars. Therapist to the stars. The celebs that you've
long gone now, and the doc that used to send them all to me he was saying, Francine, it's awful to get old.
Did he stop doctoring?
80, retired. But the other day I always said, people said, oh, you know, you're are you bored? But no, he sent me in 4 emails with 50 attachments of articles he wanted me to review.
Oh.
On exercise and cancer.
Oh, whoa.
So.
Are we wrapping it up? We have to.
Yeah.
Okay, so Good night, everyone.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Spending time with you again.
Yeah.